Thank you for tuning in to this podcast that is part of an ESG Knowledge Session, brought to you by Fonds News and Investment Officer. The session is dedicated to the COP26 Climate Conference in Glasgow, where world leaders will meet to find ways to combat further global warming. My name is Marije Groen and welcome. In the run-up to COP26, the eyes of the world are on China. In March this year, the People's Republic announced its intention to accelerate emissions until 2030 and to become net zero by 2060. Being responsible for a third of the carbon emissions in the world, the path to net zero raises eyebrows, predominantly in the West. And that is unjustified, says my guest of today, Shannon Zhang, Senior Product Specialist for Allianz Global Investors and located in Hong Kong. Shannon believes that China not only has a clear and realistic plan, but also sound and understandable reasons for it. I'll talk to her about the energy challenges the People's Republic is facing, how it plans to become carbon neutral by 2060, and how this ambition offers unique investment opportunities for investors. Shannon, welcome. Wonderful to have you.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Shannon, in September 2020, President Xi Jinping declared that China will become climate neutral by 2060. Tell me, what is in it for China?
Sure. Well, actually, being a product specialist, I represent our Chinese equity capabilities to global investors. I would say that after the UN meeting last year in 2020, one of the most frequently asked questions is regarding China's net neutral ambitions and how realistic it is, how achievable it is, and why China is embracing on this path. And these are the most concerning questions from our clients or from Chinese China observers, I would say. Well, actually, having followed China for quite a long time, I would say there are multiple reasons why China is doing this. And of course, the most direct reason for this is that China is being a very responsible global citizen. China has long been accused of producing CO2 emissions to the world, and being the second largest economy in the world, the carbon intensity is also quite high. So on this front, I think China's move towards being carbon neutral, or at least this commitment, is showing the dedication of this country to also contribute to the comeback of global warming internationally. And let's not forget that China is the fourth largest country in terms of natural land area. So naturally, this country is also vulnerable to deterioration of environment and extreme weather conditions. So from that end, you know, it makes sense for China to be part of this journey. But I would say that apart from climate considerations, I think there are also other reasons for China's net zero commitment. So, for example, this commitment can help promote the development of green energy and the transformation of a manufacturing sector and industrial sector and supply chains within China. And this is very crucial for the longer-term sustainable economic growth in China, and also put China in a more competitive position, especially compared to some international firms which offer very strong technology on this front. And also, you know, when I was little, we were always advocated that China's lack of oil, in this sense, crude oil, in China is very coal-rich. So China has always been relying strategically on oil imports. And if we decline our consumption of fossil fuels, right, that basically means China can benefit from lower reliance on imported oil. And we all know what that means, you know, in an environment with rising geopolitical tensions. So I think there are multiple reasons why China is doing this, not just because morally is correct, but also because it indeed there are some tangible benefits for China to be in this game.
Right. You mentioned already coal production, indeed. Part of China's plan to become climate neutral by 2060 is accelerating this coal production. What is the logic behind this decision, Shannon?
Well, I actually won't call it a accelerating of coal production. I mean, by the absolute amount, I know that by projection that the coal production in China would need to go up before it goes down. Let me put it this way. It's like a high-speed train that needs to change its direction, right? So it's moving on a fast pace. So before it can drive backwards, it needs to press the pedal and slow down first. So I would say that we're on that slowing down path, but then it means we're still moving in the same old direction. I think the overall logic is, you know, because we start from a very low base, right? Around 2/3 of overall energy consumption in China comes from coal. So that's very, very different from many European countries, if I understand correctly. So the base is very low. So therefore, coal is a indispensable piece within the Chinese economy. And coal consumption is therefore a function of the overall economic size and a shift in energy mix. So if we weave these two together, it basically means that we need to rely on the increasing use of green energy to drive down the overall coal consumption. And we are now moving down this path. Chinese government is promoting the use of non-fossil fuel energy source very quickly. So I would say that the direction is correct. It's just we need to do it in a more faster pace.
Right. And you speak of this future energy mix. What do you think that mix will look like?
Well, we need to achieve carbon neutral, don't we? So the desirable outcome is naturally that majority of energy consumption or energy mix should come from renewables or non-fossil fuel sources of energy. And then, of course, there are still a small part of the piece which needs to be maybe coal or oil, but then that can be captured through, you know, carbon capturing technology or other carbon quota purchase, for example. So so unavoidably, renewable energy will be a very important part of the entire map. So currently, as I said, around 2/3 or 60% of all the energy consumed in China are coming from coal. So we're actually starting from a very low base. So gradually in the future, we should see this percentage to drop significantly. And the percentage of renewables such as solar, wind or hydropower will need to go up substantially. And also the rest should be coming from, let's say, nuclear energy or hydrogen or biomass energy. But because those energy sources are not as commercially viable or as safe, you know, as the alternatives such as solar, so far we are not projecting it to be a significant part of the energy mix yet.
That nuclear energy that you mentioned, indeed, there is a lot of controversy about it, obviously. Also, the cost price a unit is higher than other renewable energy sources. Why would you say nuclear energy despite the risks and the cost that it involves?
Actually, I think the current environment in China is, I would say, nuclear energy is a must-have, right? Because by the nature of it, it is very reliable. It has very high energy density. It is zero carbon. It doesn't emit CO2 by the production of it. And it's as you said, you're correct that the setup cost, the initial investment is very, very high. Imagine building up a nuclear plant, a power reactor. But the ongoing cost is relatively low. So it's actually a very cost-effective way of energy production. That's why, if I'm not mistaken, let's say France is very advanced in nuclear energy, right? So it is a very commercially viable choice of action. It's just in China, nuclear is not the major contributor. I actually looked at the data last year. I think nuclear was around 5% of overall energy production. It's not as high as people imagined. I think the emphasis when it comes to nuclear is always both development and safety. So when it comes to all other renewable energies, it's always like how much capacity we want to have. But when it comes to nuclear, safety is always like triple emphasized within any policy document. I think this is, you know, the disaster of Fukushima obviously is a reminder of how disastrous it could be if you don't handle the radioactive waste very well. So that's why I guess in China, people are not relying purely on the development of nuclear energy. But, you know, we are sort of diversifying across many different energy sources for a more sustained future. That's my take.
Yeah. And if we look at other sources of energy, is there, for example, going to be a role for solar as well, solar energy?
Yeah, you're right. Actually, solar energy is one of the most commercially viable renewable energy in China at the moment. When I first joined this industry, I remember it was 10 plus years ago. And that's when a lot of companies in China were chasing solar energy because there were huge subsidies in the market. And over the past 10 years, the technology has improved significantly and the cost of solar modules has dropped massively by over 90%. So previously, people only used solar because there is a subsidy. And without subsidies, solar electricity is much more expensive than coal electricity. But now, with the drop in solar equipment or solar module prices, then we've achieved what we call grid parity in China, which means if you don't feel a difference as an end user if you use solar electricity or coal electricity. So there's grid parity here. And this is why that there has been quite massively adoption of solar energy, not only in China, but globally. And China is actually one of the biggest players in terms of solar equipment making internationally. I would say maybe 2/3 of the chance, if you look at any solar equipment that people use, even in Europe, that's made in China. So actually China is quite a big player in this field. And solar is also projected to be one of the major contributors to green energy in the future for China.
Shannon, heavy industries are strategic to China's economic growth and also a cornerstone of the Chinese national policy. They are also a net contributor to carbon emissions. So how to deal with those seemingly conflicting interests as an investor?
Yes, you're right. Actually, when I first sort of got in touch with this concept of carbon neutrality, and people would immediately think that, look, that's really, really bad news for heavy industries, steel, coal, cement, aluminum. These are the most polluting industries, especially in the sense of CO2 emission. So people think there's a very natural policy headwinds to these industries. But if you think about it, how can the economy survive without the production of steel, coal, cement, or aluminum, right? We need to, you know, build cars, we need to build home appliances, we need to build infrastructure. So these are actually the basic, very, very basic elements of they are the cornerstones of economic growth in China. So China cannot go without these basic materials. So they need to exist. But how they exist is the question. Actually, a lot of these companies, it's not the reduction of emission, it's not a new problem to them. It's just re-emphasized for them, and the process has to be accelerated. A lot of these front runners or technology leaders with these heavy industry in China are already trying to explore new ways of producing the same material. So for example, for some steelmakers, they're trying out hydrogen steel, so using hydrogen to produce steel. For some of the aluminum makers, because they consume a lot of electricity in their production process. So they're moving closer to the renewable power plant. So next to them, there might be a hydrogen electricity power plant, and they can use the green power that way. So they're trying different ways, try to reduce their carbon footprint. I don't think they will be reduced to absolute zero, in the short period of time, but at least means those players that are leading this technology change can become the winners of the future. Let's imagine if there are tighter policies around this, or if companies have to start purchasing carbon quota, then actually these players can benefit from it, and they may even start to sell their technologies to others. So I think there's also opportunity here. It's not that all companies in heavy industries are bad. Actually, those innovators could well become the winners of the future.
And also because they operate on a large scale, I can imagine the impact that they eventually are able to have is quite big, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's also a scale business. So imagine if you operate in 20 cities versus one city, of course, the former would have the spare capacity or R&D capability to drive changes.
Yeah. You mentioned indeed big cities. Transportation in and between China's metropole cities is also a source of pollution. How does China plan to transform its transportation?
That's actually a very interesting question. I've been to Europe a lot of times, especially I've been to Amsterdam multiple times. And the first time I went there, what impressed me was the density of population. So you can't see that many people on the road, even over the weekends, right? So and that's a huge contrast with the big cities in China. So Hong Kong is not the biggest city for sure, and Hong Kong has 7 million population. In my hometown, which is a second tier city in North China, a city called Dalian, it has 5 million, easily 5 million plus population. So I would say the concept of metropolitans carries a different meaning in China versus in Europe. And actually, with such density of population, public transportation is very crucial to the mobility of the population around. And in fact, for a lot of people in mainland China now, and even for people in Hong Kong, if we have the choice, then we can travel around within China via high-speed rail train rather than only drive around in our cars. So I think the transportation puzzle has sort of two legs to it. One is that you have to have very efficient, very well-planned public transportation. So when people choose to go from point A to point B, they can choose to go either through high-speed rail trains or maybe through planes. But the first one has much less carbon intensity. So this is why it's actually a good thing that China is building up all this high-speed railway network. And then with their effective and electrified, public transportation system, then the next question is, what about the consumer cars that people drive around? This is why there's also a big push for these cars to be run on electricity. So the concept EV is also very relevant in China. 5 years ago, I was astonished by how much Tesla I can see in Netherlands. And even when I call a cab, I could see a Tesla. It was unimaginable 5 years back in China. But nowadays, actually, EV is quite common in China already. And when people consider buying a car, I would say electric vehicle is already seriously within the consideration comparable basket for many people in China. So I think the future is more and more cars will be run on electricity, plus that electricity is green electricity. And through this, it should contribute to a more greener or less emission from the transportation industry.
Let's talk a bit more, Shannon, about how investing in A-shares can also potentially reduce carbon footprint. The government recently took an active approach in regulating the stock market. And in August outlook of the China A-share strategy, you expect it to be constructive for investors. What do you mean by that exactly, Shannon?
Yeah, actually, there are a lot of regulations from the Chinese government recently. I wouldn't say it's a new phenomenon because investing in China actually is never free of regulations. almost just like any other countries in the world. It is more eye-catching because a lot of these regulations are actually effective on some of the more high-profile companies in China. And therefore, it was particular eye-catching. For example, there's been regulation on the big internet companies such as Alibaba, Tencent, for anti-monopoly and for some other issues. So I think this is why many people are particularly concerned. But I would say that people need to interpret it not only just looking at the recent regulation, but trying to understand why there has been such regulations. These regulations are not designed to put an end to the business model or to punish investors, for sure. I mean, because let's be honest, overseas investors is not of the higher priority of Chinese regulators. It's more for domestic use, right? So these policies are designed to fundamentally solve some of the structural issues before these issues become out of control. So for example, if you control the monopolistic positions of big Chinese tech firms, then there is more equal distribution of profit among consumers, among tech firms, and among its employees, right? And also, for example, when tech firms also try to extend their influence into the financial industry, into banking or asset management industries, then naturally that part of the business should fall into relevant regulatory framework. So I would say that this is more like a catch-up in regulations rather than a new wave of unexpected regulation. And I would say that for investors in China, regulatory risks or opportunities that exist at the same time should be always considered when looking at Chinese markets. And it doesn't matter if you are listed in China A-shares or if you're listed in Hong Kong or US, or we call it offshore China, because all these companies, as long as you operate in China, you are not free of regulatory risk. So I would say that, in fact, the recent regulatory framework or changes in regulations is a very interesting reminder for investors that you shouldn't really differentiate China A-shares and China offshore that much. At the end of the day, they are all Chinese companies. And when you do invest, you consider the same macro or policy backdrop. So actually, for me, I do think a more holistic approach makes a lot of sense, right? You can find good companies in China A-shares. You can find good companies in China offshore. Then putting them together then makes more sense.
So maybe as a final question, would you say that investors can benefit from the China energy transition we spoke about and all the opportunity that it brings without investing in mainland A shares?
Well, actually, I would say a lot of the beneficiaries out of this, right, are listed in China A shares. We talk about both risks and opportunities. Of course, risk exists in those areas where companies are still in the traditional fossil fuel industry or in heavy industries but refuse to change. I would say that a considerable part of such companies do have both A-shares and H-share listings. So if you invest in only investing in Hong Kong or overseas listed names, I think in one way or the other, you might have to invest in these companies. But if we think about the companies where can benefit from the opportunity side, let's say electric vehicles, hydrogen players, solar or wind power players, actually a lot of these companies are listed in China A-shares. For example, the biggest, China's biggest, or even the world's largest electric vehicle battery producer is listed in China A-shares. One of the biggest solar equipment or solar wafer producers is also listed in China A-shares. So I would say that if investors are indeed interested in this trend, A-shares is a very fertile ground for harvesting these opportunities. But you need to be quite selective. Index will not give you such exposure, but some bottom-up selecting can hopefully help you out.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here today with me, Shannon, and for explaining us more about the situation in China around energy. It was a pleasure having you.
Thanks very much for having me. It's a wonderful discussion. Thanks a lot.
I would like to thank my guest, Shannon Zan, for her time and her insights. This podcast was brought to you by Allianz Global Investors. It is part of a knowledge session on ESG investing in which we look ahead to the 26th UN Climate Conference in Glasgow. For more podcasts, please go to fundsnews.nl/podcasts. And if you'd like to learn more about Allianz Global Investors' climate vision and investment strategies, please visit allianzgi.com. Thank you for listening, and until the next time.
Investing involves risk. The value of an investment and the income from it may fall as well as rise, and investors might not get back the full amount invested. The volatility of fund unit or share prices may be increased, or even strongly increased. Past performance is not a reliable indicator of future results. Investment funds may not be available for sale in all jurisdictions or to certain categories of investors. For a free copy of the sales prospectus, incorporation documents, daily fund prices, key investor information, latest annual and semi-annual financial reports, contact the issuer at the address indicated below or allianzgi-regulatory.eu. Please read these documents, which are solely binding, carefully before investing. This is a marketing communication issued by Allianz Global Investors GmbH, allianzgi.com, an investment company with limited liability, incorporated in Germany, with its registered office at Bockenheimer Landstrasse 42-44, 60323 Frankfurt M, registered with the local court Frankfurt M under HRB 9340, authorized by Bundesanstalt für Finanzdienstleistungsaufsicht, www.boffin.de.